Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the Full Gear Preview. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by one of the Dadley Boys, Michael Hamflett from What Culture, as we look ahead to this weekend's AEW Full Gear pay-per-view. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts where we review AEW Dynamite, AEW Rampage, Raw, SmackDown, NXT 2.0 pay-per-views. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week complete with a pretty good quiz, of course, on Wrestle Culture. As I said, though, joined by Hamflett to look ahead to tonight's Full Gear pay-per-view. And as I forgot to do a wrap on the AEW Rampage preview, I thought I'd do an extra special one here for the pay-per-view.
God.
So, here we go.
Oh, no.
It's finally here, Full Gear 2021. Whatever happens, I hope they all have fun. Punk, Kingston, the Super Click. If this was an ice cream, I'd take a lick. Baker, Conti, who emerges as a hero? And who wins between Danielson and Miro? To keep order, this show might need the police. And we've got a street fight in Minneapolis. This card is great. All killer, no filler. Darby versus MJF. Who's the best pillar? Will Omega and Paige be a match heaven sent? And like Mark says...
Well, looks like we've had enough talk. It's time for the main event.
Thoughts?
Not a single one left in my head. Can we wrap the podcast up?
Yes. So anyway, enjoy Hangman Page becoming world champion. We'll be back to review it on Monday.
Climax of the biggest story in wrestling. And you have sullied its underpants with that skid mark of an introduction.
If this was an ice cream,
I'd give it a lick. Oh God, I've transported in both the way you said I'd give it a lick and the mention of ice cream to the episode of that Peter Kay thing where he sells ice cream out the front window and blue movies out the back. I'd give it a lick.
Anyway, how are you feeling about Full Gear tonight?
I was really excited. I was absolutely buzzing before we walked in here. Right, let me try and compose some thoughts, because you certainly have already composed some things. No, of course I'm excited. Really excited. So AEW's pay-per-views before All Out came with a side order of dread, because no matter how good the storylines were, you thought, oh, this is going to go too long. Oh, every match is going to get 5 minutes. Everything's going to feel too bloated to love it as much as you really want to. And of course, they were cursed with predominantly taking place in the pandemic era as well, which we're not out of the pandemic, but we're out of the pandemic era. All Out set the bar really high. I don't necessarily expect Full Gear to reach the heights of All Out, but the peaks will be that little bit taller if everything goes to plan. And it's a plan that you would hope it will go to, because AEW have earned it. They've earned the good graces and the universe being on their side and the booking that we want to see paid off in such a satisfying fashion. Just quickly, because obviously I know we're going to go into this match by match, but what Full Gear should do, hopefully, which All Out could have done and multiple Dynamites have done if you've been watching all this time, but this should be the show where afterwards there will no longer be this, and I understand how the culture of hot takes fosters this, but there should no longer be the worry that if 1 week on Dynamite you can see what a character is doing for the benefit of their long-term story, but you're a bit frustrated with the short-term gains, you should no longer worry about that. Anyone that is still left worried about, for example, CM Punk's long-term story, after Full Gear, have just lived through the payoff of 1-2 year feud. So they should be able to look at it and see, right, this is actually just 2 or 3 months into a 2 year story. Mm. And look at what a good job they did of paying off this long term one. That is one of my big hopes for the big takeaways from Full Gear, is the feeling that everything else that's feeling like it might be taking a long time or feeling like you've got to be patient for will be worth it in the end because of the events of Full Gear 2021, unless they listen to an old tag team champion wrestler and go for the heat instead.
Yeah, I think we both agree it's only going one way, that main event. But we'll get to that in due course. Let's run through the card and get your thoughts on all the matches. Quickly on the kickoff, on the pre-show, whatever you want to call it, Nyla Rose and Jamie Hayter versus Kairi Shida and Thunder Rosa. It feels like a straightforward one, that as well.
I think so. Is there no story, or is this loosely TBS tournament adjacent? Because Nyla Rose, you fancy to have quite a big run in this tournament, you know, and there's not really... The thing is, there's never any story for these buy-in women's matches, and then often they end up delivering.
Yeah.
So, like, Thunder Rose is this big star who's having these great matches, who is, like, super warmly received. Nyla Rose will probably be a favourite to beat an injured Hikaru Shida. So you've got two at least reasonably well-booked acts coming together. I just think the babyfaces win. Yeah. A nice start to the night.
Yeah, completely agree. Right, let's start. I'll try and do this on the reverse of the Wikipedia page, and then we can conclude with the world title match. So we start with a match that allegedly was going to be a fatal four-way at one point, which means three people would have been cheered and Cody would have been there as well. Pac and Cody Rhodes versus Malakai Black and Andrade El Idolo. A weird build to this, and I sense an interesting match nevertheless.
It's a strange one. It doesn't feel like a pay-per-view match, this, does it? It's got a real... Like, this is not the insult that it would be if it was WB, but it's got a Dynamite stench about it, this match. And what I mean by that is it's just the stakes don't exist beyond the fact that Cody is in it. Not to degradate the other three, but you think, oh, what are you doing here? You know, is this part of Cody's story that he's telling at the moment, that I will not turn? Is the idea that Cody is mindful that a lot of the crowd don't like him, but not all of them do? So is he going to keep saying, I will not turn until 100% of the crowd hate him? And then he doesn't need to, because he has turned. He's just the last person to realise it. Will it come here? It's odd for Cody to be teaming with somebody that isn't in the Nightmare family and factory. And that's interesting. I like the sort of the uniqueness of Cody having to step outside of the comfort zones of the Elite and the Nightmare factory. But I don't expect it to end well, because AEW protects the legitimacy of friendships and stables. And Andrade and Aleister Black, weird as it is, are in one.
And they can coexist.
They can coexist. I don't know if you know, guys, Tony Khan alluded to it, but they happen to have shared a similar relationship with a woman. No, I shouldn't say that. Not a similar relationship with a woman. They both know a woman you know very well. They know her very well, too. Let's just leave it at that, shall we? I don't want to say too more about this mystery woman.
And I hope that the association with her does not affect Andrade like it did with all of the stables that she had with him on Raw.
Yeah, otherwise these might suck and lose. No, I expect the heels to win. And perhaps the goal of this is Cody versus Pac as the next program.
Yeah.
And Cody saying, I will not turn. And more people siding with Pac because he's...
Siding with the bastard.
Yeah, over. Like infinitely more likable. Yeah, a bastard is more likable than you is actually a pretty cool way to go, I think. So yeah, I would expect the heels to win. If only because Cody got that last win over Aleister Black, and this... I can't believe this is still going on, but it kind of gives Aleister Black the draw line under it victory over Cody. Just don't feel good about it. I don't feel good about the match.
I think the match is going to be great. I was talking about this with Andy on the news and said, you've got two singles feuds that have produced great matches. Mm. And you're just chucking all four of them in. So I think you'd struggle to have a bad match with these guys. But I completely agree. Unfortunately, Pac and Cody are losing this one.
It's fitting that we talk about this first, because there's one of three things that I think could go on first in this match. And I'm making that prediction based completely on the vanity of the performers involved.
Yes.
Wanting the hot start. Cody's match is one of them.
Let's continue upwards, because if we talk about turns, I think this might be the scene of another turn. Christian Cage and Jurassic Express versus the Super Click. Feels like it's time to have the Christian Cage Jungle Boy feud. What do you think?
Well, I think this is another match that I think could open because I think there you've got the Adam Cole baby entrance as a super hot start. You've got the Young Bucks knowing that this isn't a tag team title match, so it's going to feel a bit less prestigious. But if they can go out there and steal the show in the opener, then that keeps everybody, you know, thinking about them as, you know, main event concerns, as great as the Young Bucks are. The Superkick should win. So yes, I see what you're saying about the turn possibly coming. I'm not so sure this is the night. I think it's almost like during the wound licking period, Christian Cage will stew on a bad night for himself and Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus. And I could well see the turn coming as a result of the defeat, but maybe not on the night. Superkick winning here, of course, justifies Adam Cole's placement with the Bucks instead of Kenny Omega, and it furthers this idea that he believes himself to be the key to all of this, the best wrestler in the world, the guy that is better for the Young Bucks than Kenny Omega ever was, and all that sort of stuff. So you're strengthening the Superkick with a win here, you're weakening Christian's relationship with Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus, all that good stuff. And the match will rule because it's what they've done here, which I quite like, is the trios match with weapons and plunder is more interesting than the separate two matches. I feel like we got everything we needed out of that Dynamite match between the Bucks and Jurassic Express. And Cole Christian was a bit TV more than pay-per-view feeling. This will be wild. This will be insane. The Bucks are awesome at constructing matches like this. We'll try very hard to steal the show, but not the turn, not for me just yet.
Do you think they're going to have the visual win for Jungle Boy, maybe even tapping out Adam Cole, but the ref doesn't see it because they're all over the bloody place because false count anywhere?
Possibly. If not Cole, one of the Bucks, the snare trap getting put over as this devastating hold certainly doesn't hurt because you would expect him. You would expect the end of the feud with Christian to end in that same way, Jungle Boy tapping out the older veteran with his deadly submission. So, yeah.
CM Punk, Eddie Kingston's next on the docket. I mean, for something that got thrown together, and obviously not, you know, they planned this, but in our eyes, thrown together over the past couple of weeks, it's one of the hottest things on the show.
Oh, it's like, I pity the thing that's going to follow this, because it's the...
It almost by their track record, the women's match, probably.
Oh, yeah. It feels like the main event. Like, honestly, on a card that has got the payoff, the Hangman Page, Kenny Omega payoff, this feels like it could have gone on last on another night. There is something magic in the air around Eddie Kingston right now. The Players' Tribune piece that dropped this week that had the world talking. Eddie Kingston coming across, as he always does, like this perfectly conflicted babyface. A guy that you absolutely want to root for because of his self-confessed issues rather than in spite of them. I think what started as Eddie Kingston skewing heel and very much losing his patience for CM Punk in that backstage interview where he knocked the mic out of Shivani's hand has now morphed a little bit into Kingston making us all take a look at CM Punk and that I know you and everything that got said to him in the Rampage back and forth before he tried to literally bite his head off. Everything was very much there to release CM Punk's smugness just a little bit, just a little bit. And the idea that Eddie Kingston can look at Punk and think, you're no different to me. If anything, I'm the more honest version of you. Like, just because I don't diet as well and just because I don't need the big flashy entrance and the people to cheer my name, you know, I've not got your vanity, Punk. I'm realer than you can ever be. Punk's going to hate that. He's going to absolutely hate that. And he's going to beat him by being a bit of a dick. I can't work out what it is that's going to make you feel a little bit icky about CM Punk's win here, but they're going to do it. Whether or not it's a... Because Kingston never submits in a way that he feels is a submission. He went out to Moxley. Danielson turned his lights out as he was flipping him the bird. You know, like in Kingston's mind, they don't count as submission holds. So if Punk's beating him with the Anaconda Vice, there's got to be an element of cruelty to it. There's got to be something where Kingston gets the ropes and then Punk rolls the pair of them and pulls him back into the middle of the ring and Kingston passes out. And the feeling is, I got the ropes, mate, you dick.
Yeah.
I got the ropes and you pulled me back. Or if it's a go to sleep, it's going to come... Punk's going to have to take it, like, attack him from behind unexpectedly from Kingston getting a two count and Punk getting his foot on the rope and Kingston being a bit, like, annoyed with the referee, losing his concentration for a second and Punk being wily and taking advantage. There's a finish that I haven't yet thought of that is going to position CM Punk as a slight prick. And it's situational. It doesn't have to be a Punk heel turn, not by a long shot.
No.
But it's part of this CM Punk story. He's fighting the young guys and he's doing it, he's almost doing it the old-fashioned way against Eddie Kingston. They know each other too well. and Punk's going to sort of prove that, but he's going to prove Kingston right. Yeah, we're right. I'm a bit of an arsehole. So nobody's here to see me, is it? But Kingston,
I'm an arsehole with zero losses.
Yeah. Kingston was Taz, but in a way that deeply affected Punk. Punk, when he came out and said, oh, Team Taz, you're trying to spoil the party. Like, like Taz called out Punk and said, I don't like you being here because he's a miserable bastard. Eddie Kingston did it to play on CM Punk's insecurities that the locker room really doesn't like having him here. So this will be the night that's like, oh, you don't like me being here, do you, locker room? Well, I'm going to show you what I'm going to do to him, and then what are you going to do about it? And he's going to get backstage, and in my head, in canon, in kayfabe, it's going to be like, oh, yeah, great job, Punk. Nice one, getting the polite applause. He's going to be like, I know what you're thinking.
Yeah.
I'll do that again when I have to.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's a bit like when a mate of yours meets, I don't know, someone off the telly, and you think, oh, it's so lovely when they're on the one show or whatever, and you're like, yeah, they were an arsehole to me. I just asked for a photo in a restaurant or whatever, and they told me to piss off.
Yeah.
That's the thing, the mask that slipped. I don't think that, you know, it's generally that true, but there's an element of, you know, that's the best bit of it all. I think you might be right. I think maybe if it's not some sort of, sort of bending of the rules rather than breaking the rules, maybe it is just as simple as, because Kingston likes that spinning back fist, doesn't he?
He does.
And that's a very easy ref bump right there. Mm-hmm. Punk ducks underneath it, referee gets clocked, and then, yeah, he capitalizes, let's
something
say.
Along the lines of the Roman Reigns low blow that's not technically a low blow type thing.
Exactly.
Punk will be like, ah, never mind. On we go, you know.
I didn't realize.
Yeah.
Right, let's talk about the Pillars match as was previewed in the wrap. Darby Allin versus MJF. MJF never lost a singles match, of course. Mox doesn't count. He uses the paradigm shift. That wasn't allowed. And the Chris Jericho one is some bollocks about the ref. So, how does MJF win this one?
I think this is the hardest to call on the whole card.
Not for me. Better wrestler. He's in his head. And Darby Allin, I don't know why I want to say this, but he's mid for me.
Little mid dweeb. Only done half your face paint. What's that about, Darby? What are you trying to say? No.
I think Sting's getting F10.
Wow. Wow. Oh, I wish that had already happened now you said it. I don't know about this one. Whisper it. I think the build's lived up to expectations. That's not to say the match won't, but they've not. I don't think they've quite succeeded in the ambition of that very first promo MJF cut where he said, where he tried to get into Darby Allin's head and Darby Allin was like, no, it doesn't work. I'm not sure. Because if you think about after that, it was quite detached. Remember those masked strangers beat up Darby Allin?
I'm worried about them interfering in this
match. Yeah, they've never gone back to that, have they, that device? Like, and we don't know, you're half Retribution was sacked, so they probably just find a new home in wrestling. That was never dealt with, so that's very odd of AEW to leave those loose threads hanging. They don't normally do that with the storytelling. Slap dash.
Slap jacks.
No, it's, but I think the match will deliver, ultimately. I cannot pick a winner. I look at this, the thing about them being pillars is that it makes you look at the big picture of AEW. It makes you look outward from the feud itself. And if you're looking at wins and losses in that regard, can Darby Allin afford this after losing to CM Punk? Is this a strategy? Should he lose to MJF here? Does it become Darby Allin thought he had it in big matches because he finally beat Cody, but it turns out that maybe he's not quite there yet. He was winning his big matches with Sting, but he can't do it on his own. Like, is that a story that you tell as the beginning of Darby Allin's own sort of redemption arc, I guess, that maybe takes him to the title match? Similarly, MJF, he didn't lose a lot to Jericho, but it felt like he was losing all the time. It felt like the Pinnacle were losing all the time, and they weren't. But can he afford to lose a big program here? I'm not so sure. There's a lot of people that have assumed that if and when Hangman Page gets over his first hurdle as champion, which I guess we will get to, MJF will be the guy to take the belt off him, and in fairly short order as well. So is it wise right now to be having MJF lose a very significant match, because then what you've got to work on is, and they can reheat him super easy, but work on reheating him when ideally you want to be lining him up to challenge for a title. I'm going to go with MJF, because the more I spoke about this, and I don't really like Darby Allin, but the more we spoke about this, the more I think that they'll enjoy retelling the Darby can't win the big one story.
Yeah.
They did that really effectively with Cody, super effectively. But winning the big one now has advanced beyond beating Cody for the TNT title. It's getting yourself into the number one contender's position. And against both CM Punk and MJF, you kind of failed. It also is yet another thing that pulls CM Punk and MJF narratively closer together. Darby Allin's last two high-profile defeats. So in terms of biggest picture stuff, I'll go with MJF.
I'm biased. I'm obviously going to pick my best friend, MJF. But I do think there is a bigger story, like you say, to be told here. I completely agree. I think it should be Hangman Page versus MJF at Revolution. And I think MJF should take the title off him there. And you can have a big Hangman Page title defense on. I want to say Winter is Coming, but I realize Winter is Coming last year was like early December. So if they haven't announced it yet, but
they've got the big move in January as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, so big shows
like that. Same for me, sort of booking potentially a turn between Christian and, well, Christian to turn on Jungle Boy or Jurassic Express, and then to have the Christian Jungle Boy at this to be announced show.
Big TV show they want a number for.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think you're going to have that. And yeah, you've got the Derby sort of downward spiral. But also, I think this is another chapter in the MJF and Wardlow story. And I think the way that happens is Darby Allin has him beat. Because Darby Allin's going to be a title challenger when MJF's world champion.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you want to tell this story, like you say, about him just always falling that little bit short. And then it adds more of intrigue to the world title match, whether it be on a pay-per-view or just a big TV special, whatever it is. I think Darby Allin's got him beat, and he's going to go for a huge coffin drop, maybe on Sting's shoulders on the top rope, whatever. And MJF ain't moving. He's out. But Wardlow reaches in and just pulls him closer to the turnbuckle. Darby Allin overshoots, and MJF recovers and wins the match. And I think you're right. I think right now, we're on the swing up for MJF to become a world title contender. So I don't think he can lose on pay-per-view and then, in my booking at least, on the next pay-per-view, be the number one contender. As much as we've got a bloody another one number one contender match to come later on in the evening.
Oh, there's a gazillion combinations of matches as usual. It's AEW. It's great for that. But yes, I most people seem to have got MJF positioned around the Revolution time period. So yeah, it does feel to me now that you've kind of got to give him something that feels memorable, a win that feels memorable.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Right, lots more to discuss. Title matches, street fights, number one contenders matches as well. So let's talk about the tag team titles. The AEW World Tag Team Championships are on the line. It's the Lucha Bros versus FTR. What have you made of the build to this? How we got here and the result of this match?
Drab, dry, really disappointing. And I've remained consistent on this. If you go back and listen to any of the podcasts, I've said it every time and I'm going to repeat it here. For all that I don't think they've done anywhere near a good enough job to make you care about the build, I kind of think this might try and steal the show. I think this, like, you look at this card, I think this is one of the sleeper hits of the night.
Yeah.
The Lucha Brothers are, it's really unfortunate how marginalized they've been. And I, like, there's a criticism about AEW at the moment that generates some quite ugly discourse. So I want to be careful how I approach this. But there has been discussion that there's not enough diversity across the card. Some people will out and out call the booking racist. And I feel heavy even talking about this because I don't even feel in the best position to discuss it, to be honest. But I think one of the areas where they just need to, shall we say, just look a little bit more is in addressing wrestling's historic problem.
I think you're right.
With booking non-American talents, especially in high-profile roles as champions. The Lucha Brothers haven't felt anywhere near as profiled as champions, let's remember, the top of their division as the Young Bucks did. And I don't want to make the direct comparison that a lot of people have made on Twitter, because I think there's a multitude of reasons. But one of them might be a lack of faith in the Lucha Brothers as promos. Like, who really are the Lucha Brothers? We don't know. We know they're great wrestlers. We know that Penta is dangerous and Phoenix will risk his life to pop the boys.
And the real star of the team is Alex Abrahante.
Which, again, is less than ideal. But
well,
a dancing fool coming out with the two actual genius pro wrestlers.
A fool? He wears those gloves.
Right.
He got a shiny the other week, so...
Thank you for bringing so much needed levity to this conversation. Yeah, I expect them to win, but it's got to be more than that. It's got to be... I mean, the match will... This is what I mean. I think the match is going to bang, and I think this is almost... I'm almost approaching this like a WWE thing. I'm trusting the workers because I kind of lost a bit of trust for the process here. They don't feel like credible tag team champions, and typically you would look at that and think, just flip the belts onto FTR because you kind of... You feel like they're in safe hands with FTR. But that's not the point. Book the Lucha Brothers like safe hands. Make this a restart. Have them win this awesome match and then take it forward from here. Give Lucha Brothers' next storyline some real juice. Make it count. Make it worthwhile. Make it useful on television. Like, if you think about it, the Lucha Brothers were embroiled in some weird stuff with Andrade. Andrade's had this loose connection to the Pinnacle, you know, and paying off FTR to do some dirty work with him. It's just fluff and nonsense, and it doesn't feel character-driven, and it doesn't feel like... The hostilities don't feel real. I didn't even hate the frog stuff that much, but it's just fluff and nonsense stuff in it. The match is going to be way better
than the
story's given it any right for on the night. And I just make this, where the cage match wasn't, make this the start of the reign proper.
I think FTR leave as champions.
Oh, no.
My booking.
The match could be great as well.
But. It's going to be, like you say, I agree. Well, it's either going to be a sensational match or... It's going to be one that has so much potential to be a great match. And we've seen, I remember hearing Cornette talk about the fact, stop booking FTR with bloody luchadors because it's, you know, they don't mix necessarily. And I can get where he's coming from because, you know, there have been moments, not just with the team that they faced the other week. I've completely forgotten the name of the AAA tag titles.
Yes.
That was all a big mess. And we've had elements of what I know it's like, it's all a bit of a schmoz anyway because someone's run in or someone's attacked from behind, but there's always been a sense of hesitation. So I'm cautiously optimistic about this one. But yeah, I think FTR win the tag titles. But again, this is maybe me sort of WWE braining it a bit. And what I mean by that is I book this because I'm looking at the next pay-per-view, but the next pay-per-view is in what, 3 months?
Yeah, it's a while away. Yeah.
So in theory, you know, bloody Marco Stunt, if booked correctly, could be a number one contender by that time. Mm-hmm. So anything can happen. But in my head, at Revolution, I've got FTR versus Proud and Powerful.
Okay.
Because I think they, you know, far too long have been waiting to ascend into the world title. Well, I'm basically looking for a babyface tag team to face FTR.
Yeah.
My issue, of course, there would be probably if you ask me, who wins that? I'm hot potato in the tag team titles because they've just been lost by the butt. Well, not just, but, you know, the Bucks lost them. Lucha Bros lose them on their first pay-per-view defense. Bloody, so do FTR or whatever. But who knows? Maybe that's not the case. But I think... Because what's going on, I'm not sure, I'm sorry to put you on the spot if you're not aware about this. What's going on with the AAA tag titles?
FTR have got them. FTR are defending them.
Yes.
Like, that's more than just a gimmick.
I just wanted to double check that wasn't the last couple of days.
They've got a title defense announced. It's all, really, in truth, what it is, it's Forbidden Door stuff. It's wrestlers going elsewhere to wrestle. It's more than, they're not props, basically, which I think when they won them, that felt, because, I mean, it was such a trivial way to win the belts. That felt like what they were going to be there for. If anything, I assume that this would play as title for title. And that would have added a bit of heat to it.
Yeah.
And instead, it's like, no, the FTR are going to go and...
That sort of factors into my booking then, because I don't know who they're facing and their next defense.
I can't remember. I'm sorry. Yeah,
they defend them because they're facing the Lucha Bros, the AAA tag titles after this, because I'm ending up with the Lucha Bros having belts. It's just not the AEW ones.
Oh, okay.
So I think here... Well, first of all, obviously, Alex Abrahantes is going to Canadian destroy Tully Blanchard.
Yes.
Been saying that for a while.
I'll go for that.
And I think FTR makes shenanigans fun again, having been just burnt out in WWE. they're just sort of, oh, you sneaky little bastards. Mm-hmm. And I think we're going back to an old trope that we've seen quite a lot. Mask stuff. And by that, I don't mean FTR are wearing masks. I saw the terror rip across your face there. There is some mask-related incident. I remember the one where they tied... Was it FTR who tied him to the top rope?
Was it the Butcher and the Blade?
Maybe Butcher and the Blade, that's
right. And then
he
had a second mask.
That was it.
That was awesome.
So something akin to that, which basically leads to them being able to pull out the big rig and get the victory. And then for the AAA tag titles, you have titles versus masks. And if we want to be tag team champions... Oh, you're not... Fight with the tag team title. Sorry, lost them. No chance at them. But you know what? Well, these other belts, yeah, they're more your sort of belts. But if you lose, you both have to unmask.
Ooh. See, yeah, I see you've got masks versus title. Yeah, I like that. Well, see, I had one spot prediction for the match that you reminded me of when you were talking about that there. Cash Wheeler goes for his springboard 450 that he missed against the Young Bucks. But he hits it this time, and it only gets two. And the implication is, he's finally hit it. But they're better than the Lucha Brothers are better than the Young Bucks. Rey Fénix has got more in him than the Young. He doesn't have to dodge it. He can take it and survive it because you don't do my moves, pal. I'm the high flyer around here.
Popping up like Kenny Omega getting hit with the, what was it, the Golden Trigger? No, what am I thinking?
Oh, yeah, the one count off the, yes, off the Golden Trigger.
Yeah. Right, well, that's the one we're going to differ on. One I sense we're probably going to agree on comes next. The Minneapolis Street Fighters, the Inner Circle, Chris Jericho, Jake Hager, Sammy Guevara, Santana and Ortiz versus Men of the Year, Ethan Page and Scorpio Sky, and three members of American Top Team, JDS, Junior Dos Santos, Andre Orlovsky, and Dan Lambert. And they stood tall on Dynamite.
They did, and let this be, I guess, a celebration of a really successful Dan Lambert run. I don't know if this is the end. I certainly hope it's not. I've said this for a while. I think Dan Lambert is the guy that you put with Cody. I think they would be awesome together.
Oh, yeah.
I think they would be absolutely awesome together.
Maybe Arn helps FTR win so we can get him on, out of that picture.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I love Dan Lambert and I hope he sticks around, but this is a hell of a way to write the character off if this was just a nice fleeting romance between Lambert and AEW. Should be fun. Has to be separate from the trios match with the Super Click. Another match, this was the third of three that I could see going on first because you get the big Judas sing along, you get the big happy sort of, and then, and next up, the women's title. speaking of women, one thing I do hope that occurs in this match is that Paige VanZant floors people, like just have it like hitting some fast punches on Chris Jericho or something like that, like something that just presents her as the real threat of American Top Team all along, because I think she's been such a standout performer in this program. I think she deserves an awful lot of credit for lining up Chris Jericho, written down to say, oh, couldn't write that. You literally did, Chris.
We had a 10-minute segment that on it. Me and Cedric absolutely despised that.
I think she was pretty awesome to allow herself to be put in that position. Not that she would have had a say in it, because who's going to say no to like a locker room leader when you're new to this sort of thing? But I just feel like she's got oodles of star potential, but American Top Team can't win. So you give her some sort of shine in the match. What I would do if I'm fantasy booking is I would give her the shine and then I would have somebody run her off.
Mm-hmm.
Thunder Rose has had loose association with Sammy Guevara before through Sammy's vlog. Have Thunder Rose be the one to run Paige VanZant off. You've actually created a splinter angle.
I can help you out here, by the way, because Thunder Rose is busy on the kickoff.
Go on then.
Pammy's hitting the 6:30.
Perfect. Great. Yes. Brilliant. Pammy Guevara herself.
In the dress that she, the really flowy
yeah,
dress
that she wore in to propose. Yeah.
Is that 6:30? I don't know. I genuinely couldn't see where she was in all of this.
I'll take that. And then everyone hits the finisher on Dan Lambert. The obvious conclusion is a Judas effect to finish. And then he screams in pain to the walls of Jericho. The bastard grabbed from Florida Championship Wrestling 1975. And he screams for his life in that. Personally, I think why not maximize a few more minutes here and have Sammy be the one to get the win and get the shine. Because when he was entrusted with carrying some of those segments, he didn't carry them very well. This has been the Jericho Lambert show, but you have an opportunity here, considering that Sammy's not defending the belt, to give him something akin to the end of Stadium Stampede.
Yeah.
Where you didn't see that all along this was actually going to be about Sammy having a big night. Jericho's fucking off soon, please. Like, for a tour. So at some point, the Inner Circle don't have to split, but they do need to splinter. As you've said about Proud and Powerful, get to business. Get fucking on with things. You're too good for this. Jake Hager can, I don't know, to be honest, sit there and wait for Jericho to come back. Can they film vignettes where he's in the car park? I'm just here waiting for Chris. He's on tour with Fozzy. Yep, just waiting for Chris. And I'd like Sammy to get the shine. I sense this will be Judas Effect, followed by Walls of Jericho after everybody else has hit the finisher on Big Dirty Dan.
Yeah, I've got to agree with you on that one. In case you're wondering, by the way, wait a second. Where on earth is Jorge Masvidal in all this? Why on earth isn't he involved in it? He's fighting. He's fighting. In less than a month's time. Yeah. He's fighting Leon Edwards at UFC 269. Hell of a card, by the way. Not to get off topic. UFC 269 looks absolutely mint. So,
269?
Yes.
Nice.
So... maybe he makes an appearance, but I would bet my house on him not doing anything too physical because this fight with Leon Edwards, it's got a bit of beef to it. Effectively, in case you're wondering, I've got on a complete tangent now. What was the starting point for this Jorge Masvidal character that came out of nowhere? Because wasn't he fighting in the UFC for ages? Yeah. He had a backstage fight with Leon Edwards after they both fought, I believe, at one of the UFCs many, many moons ago. And he came up with the iconic line, I gave him the three piece with the soda, which is where he just like cheap shot him three times and ran away.
Oh, brilliant.
And then he was like, oh, I'm going to start baptizing fools. He ended Ben Askren's career with that knee, won the BMF title, et cetera, et cetera. Here we are. So maybe Jorge's going to do some more stuff down the line, and maybe the beauty of him not being in this match allows for that.
Yeah.
I think you're right. I'm just trying to pair people off in my head. You obviously put JDS, Junior Dos Santos, with Jake Hager. I think... I'm pairing the tag teams off, especially because I just want Santana and Ortiz to be shown as the great tag team that they are and the fact that they should be number one contenders by the time Revolution rolls around. And as a result, I sort of go, well, Sammy and Andre, there you go. That's going to be a bit of a size discrepancy, but that's a fun story to tell. Mm-hmm. And if all you're doing is having Andre Arlovski bump, hopefully that should be easier than when you try to get Junior Dos Santos to do working punches, etc. So I think, yeah, you're right. I think Jericho and Dan Lambert factor into the finish and then no one gets harmed. Not that it matters, but no one's going to be like, oh yeah, who'd lost to the team of five? One of the two UFC fighters or cage fighters. I don't think it's that. And I can't sanction a loss for Ethan Page or Scorpio Sky. So it has to be Dan Lambert in my book.
In defense of all the guys involved here, the miniature version of the match on Rampage a few weeks ago was pretty good.
Yeah.
It was pretty heated. Nothing went disastrously wrong with the UFC guys. So yeah, this really, with bells and whistles and on a pay-per-view and with kind of Chris Jericho directing traffic, I don't have a lot of it. I have no worries about this. I'm kind of good with it, you know? It's pay it off, be done with it. It's reached its peak, which is nice. So yeah, no complaints.
Slight issue. Just looking, going, oh yeah, so excited for UFC 269. Jorge Masvidal's injured. He's not going to be fighting.
Oh.
So I don't think he's going to be doing anything anyway.
Ah.
But if he's injured, he's definitely not doing anything.
No.
At the event.
I hope he didn't get injured doing something practicing with AEW.
Yeah. Well, no word on it, but I think we'd have probably heard from Dana White if that had been the case. I can only imagine what he would have said about. Anyway, let's talk about the AEW World Championship Eliminator Tournament final. Winner, of course, receiving a title shot down the line. This obviously was meant to be Bryan Danielson versus Jon Moxley. We still wish Jon Moxley well in his recovery. Our thoughts are, of course, with him. All of us here at What Culture, incredible, brave move, what he did, the right thing to do. And if you're going through something similar, please do reach out, seek help, talk to someone about it, because there's no shame in it, as Moxley has proven. Anyway,
you're right.
Bryan Danielson, Miro. Normally, you'd go, oh, they've hoyed in X to replace the person, so obviously the other guy who was always going to be in it automatically wins. Talk about a wild card in Miro.
Like a wild card, but it was as if it was a card they were keeping just in case they needed to play it.
Mm-hmm.
The whole deal, Miro in his...
I was fuming when he wasn't in this tournament.
Well, Miro in his dark... I assumed that all that stuff he was saying about, I've lost a title, I need a title, I thought he was a lock for being in this bracket. And then you have to wonder what the play was with him long term about, I can't go home to Lana until I've got a belt again. And I feel so ashamed because I've lost my TNT title. This couldn't have been more perfectly placed for Miro to be our replacement, you know? And now we're here. I'm going to stick. Well, so I was thinking about this on the way into work this morning, right? So all along, when the brackets were announced, I was like, well, this is Moxley's tournament. He beats Danielson in this epic. It's a cool first loss for Danielson to take. And then Moxley is the perfect opponent for Page, because I always loved the idea of Moxley losing and finally having no excuse.
Mm.
Like, all this time, the anger was as a result of something. And then it's like, you can't really be angry anymore, John. You had your shot and you lost. And then it's like, well, now I'm angry because I'm a prick. Like, and that's what finally confirms the turn. You know, yeah. I loved that as a story. And obviously that can have to wait, and maybe he's unturnable now. I don't know. That's a different conversation for a different podcast. But Miro, as a result, you can pretty much tell that exact same story. Miro is like, well, sorry, Hangman, but this is my destiny, mate. Like, I've been talking to my gods, and as he said with the Brian thing, like, I know you have a wife and child at home, but I have a family too, and my family needs me. My family is only one woman, but she hasn't seen me for several months because I've been in solitude waiting for this very moment, so I've got to take your title. I love that story just as much. And then this morning, I was thinking about how well a Danielson win on the undercard would drive the tension in the main event. Because yes, Danielson versus Hangman Page would be cool, and one day will be cool. That match is going to rule one day. But if you throw Bryan Danielson out as the number one contender an hour before Kenny Omega is set to defend your title, and you are showing people the possibility of a Danielson-Omega rematch for the belt when the last one wasn't, it heightens the tension even more so in the main event. You know, whatever it is that they're going to play with in the main event, whatever it is that they're going to do, and they will do it because they're artists, make you believe that, oh my God, Omega's going to beat him.
Yeah.
Imagine that with the dial turned up because Danielson is the number one contender and Danielson Omega. They're showing you two matches here, aren't they? They're either showing you Miro Page or they're showing you Danielson Omega, where in reality Page is going to win the title, so it's winner versus Page. But the idea is that whoever wins shows you one specific match. Miro winning in the mid-card shows you what you already know, which is that Hangman Page is going to beat Kenny Omega. Danielson winning makes you think, what happens when Kenny is... Page not going to kick out the one winged angel. Yeah. Like, the makes that two count if it is indeed a two. All the more special. I'm going with Miro because I just feel like that's where the booking makes the most sense to me. But it's maybe tougher than that.
This is Michael Sidgwick. Neither can afford to lose for me this match. And I'm leaning towards Miro, but I have no idea. By the way, if you're enjoying our discussions of AEW and you like Michael Sidgwick and his wonderful musings on it, you can get your hands on his book. You can pre-order it right now, whatculture.bigcartel.com. Becoming All Elite is fantastic, the bits that I've seen. So go and get your hands on that right now. You can also order it as a bundle with his NXT book. Go and check it out, whatculture.bigcartel.com. But yes, Bryan Danielson, Miro, how you hand Danielson his first loss is going to be very interesting. So I've just taken the coward's way out and said Lana's going to kick him in the cock.
She makes a debut.
And she's like, I've had enough time waiting at home for Miro. So I've come out, hoy you in the bollocks.
We did say that when he was in the D's Nuts feud with Eddie Kingston, didn't we? The whole thing seemed primed for Lana kicking somebody in the dick.
Yeah.
So maybe tonight is a night.
Maybe.
But I want to see Bryan being forced to kick his own head in a particularly bendy game over.
And especially, a lot of neck stuff, obviously, but also the multitude of submissions and pinfalls and finishes that he's already got over. Probably delve into this here because Miro's a monster, and it's one of those ones where you can give him something where, you know, he's on another level, or he's got something beyond normal human power.
Cat mutilation doesn't work because you can't kill this beef.
Exactly. Yeah. But I can't, and I won't call this one.
Oh, cool.
No, I will. I'll say Miro.
I was going to say, so he's got a neck of sand and yours is all brass, is it?
but only because, I'm thinking of a January Big Show world title and...
Miro and Page is pretty cool, isn't it?
Yeah. And at the same time, I'm thinking, can Danielson afford to lose? But then, it's Bryan Danielson.
Yeah.
Like...
AEW is a competitive landscape and wins and losses make it feel that way. Like, if Bryan Danielson goes undefeated, that's an awesome story. Like, undefeated en route to fighting for the title. It's really, really cool. But the point of wins and losses mattering is that both results can occur. And it's how you rebound. It's like, you treat that as a sports thing. It's how you rebound. You can win 20 on the bounce. And then you can go on a streak of so many defeats that you're losing one at home against Mansfield. Have I gone off on a tangent here? so, Danielson losing here there's absolutely nothing wrong with him having a bit of a rethink. And what I love about when it is that Danielson starts eating a bit of defeat or suffering a little bit in AEW is, when are we going to see the best heel to play top babyface?
Yes.
Just stop playing quite as much.
I think Punk's the one who's going to have the undefeated run.
Yeah.
And he's going to feature in it as well, because they're getting closer and closer to that.
Yeah.
You said it.
It's my favourite match that AEW could book. It really is. Like, it's Cody Rhodes coming out in that middle of the stage and not walking down the ramp, but sitting on it, is going to be fucking incredible.
Not even no words.
Cross-legged.
Yeah.
Like, comes out of his own entrance and he's cross-legged. Right.
Right, let's talk about the world title match for the AEW Women's World title. Britt Baker defending against Tay Conti. Again, this feels slightly more of a foregone conclusion than it probably should, but can Tay Conti beat Britt Baker?
No. Oh, sorry, you want me to talk about a suspension of disbelief that I haven't got because I haven't told a good enough story? I won't do that.
It's not been good, this, has it?
No. Real boilerplate stuff. Look, AEW, this is not going to be a women's division rant. This is going to be a addressing issue rant. AEW have got awesome form with long-term storytelling. You know, this pay-per-view is going to be evidence of that. Awesome form with it. And the long-term story they have told with Kenny Omega and Hangman Page has at points resulted in a couple of Kenny's title matches like not quite finding that percentage of doubt.
That's
because
fair.
Because we've always known Page is going to be the guy, right?
They got there with the Christian Cage one, I thought.
Just about. If Danielson had been fighting for the title, they would have had a believer out of anybody that Danielson could beat him. But for the most part, it's been like, this is Page's to lose, right? Mm-hmm. So it's been really tough to... And that's why I'm saying this is not a women's division issue. Currently, Britt Baker versus Thunder Rosa is the play, right? Everything Thunder Rosa does, frustratingly, doesn't get closer to Britt Baker. Britt Baker knows it. Britt Baker tries to avoid that conversation even coming up, let alone the match, the eventual rematch, where she's going to lose the title to Thunder Rosa. It's awesome. It's really, really good. Problem is, everything you do in the meantime has to be like given a lot of attention to fool people and to make believers out of people.
Yes.
You know, to make believers out of people that Britt Baker can be beaten by somebody else when Thunder Rosa is very clearly there and lined up and ready. They've not done that here. And what's worse is not only have they not done that here when you need to, they've not done that here anyway. Tay Conti is pretty great. It looks orders of magnitude better than the, you know, NXT also ran that she once was. It looks like far more ready. She's got loads of fire.
Yeah.
Has constantly improved in the ring. Like constantly. Her trajectory is a straight line pointing upwards steeply. Mm-hmm. Like that's been her improvement rate, and it's been great to watch. But what the one thing they've not done is maybe the most important, which is make you believe she can beat her. Like the six woman on Dynamite was the exact sort of thing you would do to heat somebody up for the big match. You like put a load of shine on them and you make the champion feel frightened of the challenger and all that sort of stuff. But this is the company that doesn't patronize and condescend, and it continues to do that, unfortunately, in the women's division. One program, single issue stuff, a feud over not that much, a series of tag matches, a predictable world title match. What I will say for Britt Baker, to be a bit more positive, is that she has shown a number of times now that she shines brightest when the pressure's on. And after the All Out title match, and to a lesser extent, the Ruby Soho Rampage defense, imperfect matches, but with real highs, real moments of drama that you just didn't think that she'd be able to summon. So I want to give her the benefit of the doubt here that as a champion, what she is doing is like rising up to the pressure of a situation. She shouldn't be under that much pressure. They should just tell better stories.
Yes.
But I think she'll do it again. I think this will hit a height that you're not ready for, but the result is not at all in doubt.
Yeah, there will be a DDT where you think, oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
But I agree. Britt Baker retains and continues down that road, which hopefully, as you say, has got Thunder Rosa at the end of it.
Yeah. Thunder Road.
Very nice. I wish they'd have done more with this, but I have no doubt that they'll have a great match as well. Right, let's get to the main event. Hangman Page finally taking on Kenny Omega for the world title. Hell of a road. The video countdown, obviously. I've already gone out, actually. I'm recording this on Friday.
Last night's countdown show, Wilborn. Oh, my word. What an edition of the countdown show that was.
It was my favourite countdown since Carol Vorderman left.
I couldn't believe Roman Reigns showed up on it. Fair play, actually. Like, I didn't know that the door was swinging so wide open that Roman Reigns
didn't realize that they changed the member from the American top team they wanted to Bobby Lashley.
I know. I don't, like, what's going on? What is happening here? Is this a war or was it a conspiracy all along?
But it is a hell of a, like you say, 2-year story to get here. And, well, everyone except Bully Ray thinks it's going one way. Are they right to think that? Will Hangman Page become world champion?
Well, I can't offer anything new to the discourse, can I? It's Kenny Omega in 10. One winged angel. Bish, bash, bosh. Little graphic in the corner. Get off. Bully's right. Like, you got to get this, you got to get this kid over. You got to make him lose for 2.5. Of course not. Is the debate not Adam Page is going to win the title, but is he going to kick out the one winged angel?
I think that's
the conversation. It's not about him winning because he is going to win and it's going to feel wonderful. It's about if they choose to do this. In my opinion, I don't think they should.
Me neither.
I think there is so much to leave on the table with it. So
it's who eliminates Brock Lesnar from the Royal Rumble and who wins the Royal Rumble for me. You didn't need to give both of those things to Drew McIntyre.
Yeah.
It was nice that they did, and it made him feel huge.
An interesting comparison, that, yeah. Michael Sidgwick has a book out, and I haven't read all of this yet, and I can't wait to. But we've talked enough about this over desks and over pints because we're nerds. But this idea that Okada Omega 1 was like the big bang, and there was a series of other bangs to follow, but that was the big bang of all of this. And the whole story of that match was that it wasn't that Okada was going to kick out with the one-winged angel, it was that he wasn't going to get hit by it. And that put over Okada as being a mastermind, and that was how he beat Kenny Omega. Like, he didn't want to have to think about, have I got it in me to kick out? He thought, you're not hitting me with it. You are not doing it. His counter game was impeccable and unmatched, and he beat Kenny Omega. And that, if anything, put the one-winged angel over to such an extent that the rematch was already booked by the end of it, because you were thinking, well, I mean, he didn't get you with it. And he will do, and he'll beat you next time. And they, like, you want the rematch more. This is not WWE protection. You know, it wasn't sort of a Finn Balor Roman Reigns thing of like, oh, if only he didn't get possessed by weird spirits and then the ropes fell down, he'd have beaten him. This was if he'd have hit him with his finisher, he would. It puts over the finisher in defeat. And I think that's what you do here. I think this is AEW's epic tale in the same way that that was the New Japan boom period's epic tale. And one day, Kenny Omega might hit Hangman Page with the one-winged angel and Hangman Page might kick out. One day he might hit somebody else with the one-winged angel and that person might kick out. You know, you've got that to consider. You could save it for somebody else. There has been...
Marco Stunt on Dynamite.
Of course. There has been discussion of Kazuchika Okada coming in. And of course, everybody wants Omega Okada 5, as they absolutely should. It's going to rule. So imagine there, if you've still got the one-winged angel protected to use. Imagine... because he was brought up, unnamed, but brought up in the Dynamite closing angle, the go-home angle with the contract signing. Kota Ibushi wasn't named, but he was referenced. Kota Ibushi is the only man to kick out of this move. So Hangman Page bringing him into the conversation adds a bit of credence to him being the one to kick out of it here. What if Ibushi is one day set for AEW and it's Ibushi that kicks out again? And then in a sense, you've still saved it. Because it's like, nobody kicks out with the one-winged angel. Kota Ibushi doesn't, that's weird. But nobody else kicks out with the one-winged angel. Like, there are... I just think you've done such an amazing job with everything else. Treat yourself to saving it. Have Hangman Page take the Okada route. Counter, 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 counter. Nobody, and if they do, they're a dick, is going to sit there on the little Google machines, on the Twitter machines. Hangman Page being carried aloft by the Dark Order, AEW World Heavyweight Champion. He's got his friends. He's got his mental health. He's got his kid. He's got his life. He's got his title. And go, oh, should have kicked out the one with Nigel.
Yeah,
nobody's going to do that. And I think, like, if it's a rematch, if there are a million different ways that you go with Hangman Page as world champion, there are a million different ways you go with Kenny Omega as what's next for Kenny Omega. Like, it's not just leaving something in the chamber. It's leaving this awesome, incredible, could main event another pay-per-view thing in the chamber if you want to. Give them it if you want. This is the company that gives the people what they want. I'm not going to... And conversely, I'm not going to be the guy, as Hangman Page is being carried off, going, well, they shouldn't have given away the kick-out. That's awesome too.
Yes.
Like, both things are awesome. I just want to take this awesome thing rather than the other awesome thing.
As long as Hangman Page wins the title.
Oh, Christ almighty, Jesus Christ. What the hell are they doing if they give him...
Yeah.
Like, ooh, you got... Ooh,
you've got Punk, and you've got Danielson, and you've got Cole, but... just because this sounds awful, I don't want to slag off them. Just because you've got these new kids on the block, these new shiny new toys, don't neglect the one you've been building piece by paying £8.99 a month in a magazine.
There is a thing, right? And I'm going to say it now. It's not to will it into existence. I just want it said. Things always come in threes, don't they? Bad things always come in threes, disasters and stuff. It's not a nice thing, but it's one of the things that we kind of, it's not even real, but it's proven enough times because you want it. It's like, what are those? Taurus, Sagittarius, horoscopes.
Oh, bollocks.
You kind of talk it into existence. 2021 did give us the exploding barbed wire deathmatch catastrophe. It did give us Chris Jericho falling off a cage onto a bed.
Oh, no.
We are waiting for one disaster. I don't think it's going to be Kenny Omega beating Hangman Page and everybody at the end of a big AEW thing that we've all been hyped for. It's been like, ooh.
Oh, please, no.
It's not this. But I'm just saying it now because it's been on my mind that, like, could they? No, they couldn't. This is designed to make everybody watching say, like, look at other long-term stories and know that you'll get what you want in the end. This is going to be brilliant. This is going to be glorious. Hangman Page is going to defeat Kenny Omega for the AEW World Heavyweight Championship. Don Callis is going to take a buckshot lariat, and that's going to be class. He's going to do a reverse one on the ramp. You know, they always have the ramp to the ring.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Kenny's going to be down. Callis is going to be flailing on their ramp. Come on, Kenny. And Hangman's going to take a run and do the buckshot lariat onto the ramp and take out Don Callis. He's going to knock his head off. Like,
head off.
Head off. And he's going to win the AEW World Heavyweight Championship.
I agree he's going to win. Final three things here for you, and then we'll wrap things up. Do let us know your thoughts and predictions, by the way, at WhatCultureWWE on Twitter. And we'll be reviewing this on Monday. We are all just enjoying this show at home. And then we'll be discussing it in detail on Monday. Three things. Number one, I like Don Callis booking, but my preference is Hunter Horse Helmsley carries Don Callis away.
Very good.
Takes him out of the match.
Hunter's not getting a V-trigger. That's not where this is going, is it?
No.
Oh, good. Sorry.
The only genuine thing in the midst of these three is I think the finish is him setting up for the One Winged Angel and Hangman Page, as he's has been forced down to the usual thing, spots the ropes, grabs onto them. That's how he gets to the outside. That's how he then immediately flips in to hit the finish. And number three, big celebration, obviously, afterwards. Everyone's going to be ecstatic. What a hell of a story. And he's been carried down, you know, through the, he's in the ring, everyone in the dark quarters there, everything, you know. And then John Silver carries him out on his shoulders on the ramp and fucking electric chairs him. How about you, prick?
Look, just
pull give him me some.
Pulling back the curtain here. We're in a studio today where there's some other bits of work being done. And me and you had a bit of fun with a ladder before this recording. We slow climbed it and pretended to hit each other and dive off. Wrestling is really frightening, by the way. Don't become a wrestler. And you got so excited that electric chair fit. I was terrified that you were going to flail yourself backwards and crack your head open on this ladder.
Like, out cold.
Adam Wilborn isn't watching full gear because he's still concussed.
But anyway, let us know your thoughts ahead of the pay-per-view on Twitter, as I said, at WhatCultureWWE. What I say, you can follow both of us. You can follow Michael Hamflett at...
Come on, Hangman, get it done, at Michael Hamflett.
You can follow me at Adam Wilborn. Come on, Maxwell, you get it done as well. Follow us all at WhatCultureWWE, and make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcast from, for daily wrestling podcasts. As I said, myself and both the Dudley Boys at Sidge will be back on Monday to review this show in detail. Ooh. Enjoy Full Gear tonight. Thanks for joining us. Oh, I'm sort of excited and nervous now. This has been the Full Gear preview, and we will see you soon.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.